Hello, and welcome to the Dissing My Ability podcast. My name is Ken Meeker, and I am your host. And I am happy to have my guest as Marion Lizowski. Did I say it correctly?
Lizkowski.
Ah,
very close. That's okay. You tried your best.
I did. But so, Marion is, she got connected with me through a mutual connection through LinkedIn. It was LinkedIn, correct?
Yes, yeah, it was.
Yeah. And about this podcast, she reached out to me, which I'm very thankful for. And first, I need to thank you for being so open and honest about your experiences and all of the things that you've had to work through due to your disability and your condition. And I know that allowing yourself to be vulnerable, it can be extremely hard sometimes. But we all have a story, and I think that it can be empowering to others to hear those stories. And so thank you very, very much for trusting me with your story and being willing to come on as a guest. And so with that, Marion, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to listeners and maybe tell us a little about yourself and your story, if you could, please.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Ken. My name is Marion Lizkowski, and I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in 2002. Shortly after that, actually, a few years after, I started to also develop other autoimmune disorders. Many people called them side dishes, which kind of takes the horror out of it, possibly.
makes it sound appetizing.
Yeah. So I have Sjogren's, which is severe dry eye and dry mouth. I have Raynaud's, which is, I don't know the technical term, but it's, I have circulatory issues with my fingers and my toes. So when it gets really cold, they can hurt, things like that. I have thyroid, low thyroid. And after all of developing all of that, I developed anxiety and sometimes depression, which I think is just completely normal after having to deal with all of that. Of course I develop anxiety.
Absolutely. It's just kind of par for the course. It seems like it's like, oh, here's another thing you get to deal with.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So when I was diagnosed, I think I was in shock. I had a grandmother who had severe rheumatoid arthritis, and it was back in the day when, treatments, the options weren't all that great. And my memories of her were, being severely, immobile. So that was the image that I had in my head when I heard you have rheumatoid arthritis. The doctor tried to reassure me and say, if you were going to get it, she literally said this, and I thought it was funny, but if you were going to get it, now is the best time to get it because we have all of these medications that are coming out and we're really making progress. But it was difficult for me in the beginning because I tried to ignore it. And when I had a good day in my head, I thought, well, I'm cured and I'm going to go back to the way I was. And then I'd have another bad day because I pushed myself during the good day. It was also difficult for me to come to terms with it and to share it with other people. And back then in 2002, employers and others really, they didn't want to hear it. And I would talk to somebody and I literally saw the look on their face as though I was telling them I had the flu and they could catch it. So it was a difficult beginning, and I had to learn how to, number one, be my own advocate, and number two, to figure out where to ask for help and to actually take that step and ask for help from others besides just my doctor.
Yeah, and that can be difficult.
Yes,
that can be
absolutely.
So one thing that I noticed is you talked about your struggle with disability, and you mentioned a loss of sense, like a feeling of a loss of independence. That's something that you mentioned quite a lot. And so I'm hoping that you could maybe elaborate and share how you know, being diagnosed, and everything that sort of, you know, comes with, you know, learning about a disability and a, you know, a chronic condition, how that contributed and how that led to you having that sort of that feeling of like of a loss of independence, and sort of your journey of, you know, through that, and like how it's evolved over time, that sense of loss.
Okay. Well, after I was diagnosed, within a few months, I was able to see a specialist, but it took months after that before we found something, a medication that kind of helped. And my condition actually deteriorated very quickly. So it was difficult. It began to be very difficult for me to walk and to bend at my ankles, and my feet swelled up and my fingers swelled up and my hands swelled up. And I couldn't behave the way I used to. I had, you know, moved across the country by myself with my dog. And I was expecting to start a brand new life and with all these great adventures. And here I was worrying, can I keep my job? Because it took at least an hour and a half from the time I got into the office before I could grip a pen properly. So I was hiding stuff from my bosses, from my colleagues, and I was not that confident person. I didn't know. You don't know how you're going to feel the next day. And so you don't have that consistency, that reassurance. And, you know, I was really afraid that I was going to have to chuck it all, and, you know, go back home and live with my father, in the beginning, because I didn't know how I was going to deal with it. It literally took 18 months before we found the right cocktail of medication where I started to feel like myself again. But I never went, I have never gone back. My body has never gone back to how it was before I was diagnosed. I was like a few years before diagnosis, I had my own cleaning business. I would wake up at 7:30 in the morning, do an hour of aerobics, work for 8 hours cleaning houses, come home to take a shower and go out with my friends. I never had to ask anyone for any help. And here I was asking friends, you know, can you open that for me? Can you help me up the stairs? Can I just hold on to you right now? Because I'm afraid I'm wobbly. I don't know if I'll be able to, stand up straight, those kind of things. And that's terrifying when you go from the contrast of being the strong person who was a, you know, you moved and I was going. I had big ambitions. I wanted to do a lot with my life. And now my focus became, how do I deal with my daily life? Mm-hmm. And is it going to get worse tomorrow? So the loss of independence is your loss of feeling as though if something happens tomorrow, I can handle it. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know if I could.
Yeah.
And the mere act of asking someone for help with tying your shoes or opening a jar or just admitting, you know, I feel really sick today and I can't come into work, but I didn't have the flu. I didn't have a sore throat. I just felt really, really exhausted. And I couldn't get out of bed. And how do you can't explain it. I didn't. I was too afraid to explain it to my boss. I would make up things. You know, I have a migraine today, or I have a really sore throat, or I think I'm getting the flu. And it wasn't. It was the RA, and it was the fatigue and the pain from the RA. And because I did that so often, I was afraid I was going to lose my job. You know, I didn't feel financially independent anymore. I didn't feel secure in my job, even though I was doing a fantastic job, but I had to hide so much. it weighed on me as well.
Mm-hmm. Took an emotional toll. So,
oh yeah,
that kind of leads into the next question that I had, and something that you brought up was that a sense that society kind of expects us to be working all the time, like, and you know, you have to be a go-getter or you're not going to be successful. And for people that are living with a chronic condition and that, you know, maybe it requires you to have more rest or maybe just move at a more modest pace than other people, you know, right, than they might expect. But you're otherwise capable, you know, you're still able to do things. You just have to do them differently. Right. But you said it can make you feel invisible.
Oh, yes.
And so, how did you feel? I'm hoping you can kind of elaborate on what sort of contributed to that feeling of being invisible, and how do you feel about it now?
Okay. Well, to look at me then, if you didn't look closely, I looked, and I put in quotes, normal. I hate that word, but yeah, I look normal, right?
An invisible disability. I get the same thing all the time. Most people have no idea that I have a visual impairment until they see me run into something. Yeah. And so, a lot of times disabilities can be invisible to other people. You know, they don't know what's going on the inside.
Yes. And often when my symptoms were at its worst, I stayed home. So no one saw me. Mm-hmm. No one understood that, you know, it was really, really difficult to wake up that morning and get out of bed. It was impossible to take a shower. So I stayed home and I stayed away, and I only showed myself when I was at my best. Mm-hmm. So people took that image and thought that's who I was. I had people tell me, you don't look sick. Can't be that bad. And I was like, you have no idea what's going on inside my body right now. You have no idea how much I hurt right now or how much energy it takes to stand up or to be there.
Your condition was they were being dismissive of how you
felt. Very dismissive. Very dismissive. I had a couple of friends, very sweet friends. They just didn't get it. And it was at the beginning of my disease. And one friend told me, you know, you would look so much better. And I think you'd feel better if you just put some makeup and lipstick on in the morning before you came to work. I'm sure that'll help.
Ouch.
And what I couldn't tell her at the time, because when these little quips or these little comments come, you're kind of like, it's like a little shot, like a little dart thrown at you, right? You're in shock. Like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, these tiny little, they come out of nowhere, and you're like, wait a second. You're supposed to be my friend. I can relate, and it's been different. Like, you know, oftentimes I tell people, I'm legally blind, and they're like, oh, me too. And I'm like, no. No. You don't understand. You can drive a car. I can't.
See? Exactly. Yeah. I had a boss say, you know, you take too much time off. And I'm like, but if I didn't take time off, I'd be in the hospital. Yes. So there was such a lack of understanding. And when people talk about disabilities, they think that you have to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. You have to be in a wheelchair. You have to have physical appearance. So something has to be different. Mm-hmm. And they will completely look over me as having a disability because I look as what they, how they think I look, how I think they should look, right? And I felt so invisible. And then, to be honest, I felt the pressure to make myself invisible because people didn't want to hear about what was going on with me. Mm-hmm. if I talked to my boss, if I went to my boss and I said, you know, I need to take time off, or I need a different schedule, I need to be able to pace myself better, I need to be able to, can I work from home? Can I do this? Can I do that? I was afraid I was really jeopardizing my career, because I know that when I said a few things, I could feel the reaction from the other person. They didn't say it, but I could feel it. And they judged me as lazy, mm-hmm. Not a team player, someone who's a hypochondriac, someone who just doesn't want to work. And that was not at all what I wanted to do. And, you know, I felt that when I was at work, I gave 110% while I was there, because I knew that there were going to be times where I'd have to miss. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't appreciated. It was, you had to have that appearance of, well, I'm going to get up today at 5 a.m. and go to the gym, and then I'll come into work, and I'm going to stay late because I'm so dedicated. And that's not healthy.
Yeah.
And that wasn't, and that's suicide for me. That would completely knock me out. So my needs were not a priority. They were not understood. And in the beginning, to be completely honest, I didn't understand my needs, and mm-hmm. I didn't appreciate my needs.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you have learning to become your own advocate is kind of an essential thing.
Yes.
And finding your voice and saying, you know what, I need to speak up for what my needs are. And if it's a need, I'm not going to sort of back down. And how important that is, which touches on, you talked about resilience as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of that word. I'm a big fan of the word resilience. And I think that anyone who encounters disability, learning resilience, learning how to move through it, because you don't get over it. You don't get over trauma.
No.
You have to move through it.
Right.
It doesn't go away. It just has, how much more damage can it, does, do we sort of allow it to contribute to ourselves? You know, you mentioned one of the things that, you know, doing day-to-day, like running errands, going to the grocery store, stuff like that. You know, when you don't drive, like I don't drive, I don't know if you drive or not, but I don't drive. It's doing simple chores and errands is really hard.
Right.
And people take for granted how just the ease, if they drive, just the ease that it is for them to go to get groceries. You know, for me, it's an ordeal to get groceries.
Yeah.
It takes planning, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough to where I have a partner where, you know, it's not an issue there. But when I lived by myself, I had to live next to a grocery store, quite literally next to a grocery store, in order to be able to get groceries because I don't drive, and I live somewhere where it's a million degrees outside in the summer. So you can't walk with, you know, you can't really walk anywhere. And so resilience is critical, that, you know, like, yeah, sure, that stuff sucks, but you can't let it consume you. And I think that's really recognizing that is resilience, saying, you know what, yes, this sucks, but I'm not going to let it get me down. I'm not going to let it defeat me. And I'm going to live my life. I'm going to move through this, and I'm going to get on the other side, and I'm going to be me. I'm going to be happy, and I'm not going to be ashamed of being who I am, even if with my disability or not. And I don't care if other people are uncomfortable with it. I don't care if they don't like it. I don't care. You get sort of removing the shame of otherness. You know, I think you know, that's what resilience kind of what I see resilience being. And so what does that word mean for you and your experience and your journey?
Resilience to me is appreciating all of the obstacles that you have and all of the obstacles you've overcome. You know, I not only had a full-time job, but I had to have a second full-time job managing my disease.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really come to the position of appreciating my resilience after I was able to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to be this nice person, this good person, the good patient that didn't bother my doctor too much, that didn't complain too much, that just got on with it. And it exhausted me. I had a few people on the way who helped me, really allowed me to be myself and to tell me I was fine just the way I was. Mm-hmm. And one was my doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, she, yes, yes. You know, and she literally told me, I need to know everything. I'm the person you can come and complain to. I need to know what's going on because mm-hmm. I would, you know, she would say, going home and being so exhausted, you can't get off of the couch. That doesn't mean your meds are working. That means yeah. we need to work on something else. So I had this little voice inside my head for years saying, this isn't right the way I'm being treated. You know, I'm not being appreciated enough. It's not okay. And once I got angry and I turned around and I went, look at all the things I can do. Mm-hmm. And look at how hard or how much harder it is for me to do certain things. And yet I still do them.
Mm-hmm.
And look at, you know, I don't get enough sleep every night. Most people with my disease don't. I have fatigue that I have to go through a lot of the times. I wake up and I feel like I haven't slept, and yet I have. Mm-hmm. But I still do things. I still try. I still get up every day and try to do whatever as much as I can, mm-hmm. right? Or I try and I'm learning to listen to my body. Right. So I have learned to appreciate everything that I've accomplished and everything that I fought through. And when you can do that, when you can appreciate, you know, for example, I have Sjogren's, and I had a corneal ulcer about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago. And that is hugely painful. Mm-hmm. It is so painful. And you can't look outside. The brightness just is painful. And I survived it. And I went to the doctor and I got the right treatment and I did everything I could and I healed. Some people would have, you know, they might not have understood, you know, how hard it was for me to get through that. And to stay on top of my medication and to do everything I had to do. I had to take.
Still do all the things.
Still do all the things. I had to take 10. I had to take eye drops 10 times a day. So I literally had to make myself a spreadsheet. Right. Mm-hmm. And just getting through that and coming out the other side and keeping a positive attitude. That's resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. And getting to that space where like, yep, it's another thing I get to deal with. Woohoo. And you just,
right.
you just deal with it. You just move through it and being able to do that and not let it defeat you. I think it's a powerful place when you find that.
Right.
Because you're like, you know what, this is who I am. And it's, you know, I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to be ashamed of it. It's, you know what, I'm just as worthy as anybody else of, you know, respect and dignity and all of the things that we should have and we shouldn't necessarily have to fight for sometimes.
Right. And people with disabilities, whether it's visible to the outside world or not, we have so much to give.
Yes.
So many talents. I've met so many wonderful artists and writers and business people, and they're so brilliant. Mm-hmm. And we just have to do things in a different way.
Yep.
We have to be able, allowed to do things at a different pace.
Yep.
But
what we can contribute is so tremendous. And I, you know, as a coach, I work with other people, you know, on employment and executive coaching and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to people that have a disability, I said, you don't have to hide it. You don't have to feel a sense of shame. Your ability to do all the things with your disability is an advantage. And if, as long as you can do the job, like, you know, that's all that matters. If you have to do it differently, that doesn't matter. Can you do the job is what matters.
Right.
And because you have a disability, don't ever view it as a disadvantage, because you have an ability other people don't have. You have to think in a different way. You have to accomplish the same things, but using an entirely different set of skills and abilities. That's an advantage. And if you can walk into a job interview and you can demonstrate that, and you can walk in there with your head held high and be like, yeah, I have to do it differently, but that makes me awesome because I can do their job and more.
Right.
Because I do it differently. It's getting to that place is it, you know, I think it's so empowering when you realize that you're just as capable. Just because it's different doesn't mean it's not as good.
Right. And we have so much skill to overcome obstacles.
Yeah. It takes a lot.
It takes a lot. And, you know, we have obstacles every day.
Yeah.
I have obstacles every day. You know, how am I going to make it through the day when I feel so tired? How am I going to make it through the day if, you know, my hands aren't working really well, or if I can't get up out of bed? What do I do? What do I do for myself? And, you know, I live with a partner and I still think about that. You know, how am I going to, I immediately go to, how am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. How am I going to solve the problem? And it's, that's how I work. And it takes a lot for me to step outside of myself and say, you know what, I need help for this. And I need help for that.
That's a hard, like, I can relate to that. I think it's very similar to you. I have a strong sense of independence. It's like, I can do this.
But yes.
I think we sometimes, you know, part of advocacy, I think, is learning that, you know what, sometimes we need to ask for help because it serves our best interest.
And, right.
You know, like, you know, I need help with, you know, with things that, you know, as we were talking about earlier, you know, like when I had that whole scorpion incident, you know, that I wanted to bring them off, you know, my friend and I, we took a video when we were doing that recording. And, because we had the sense like, this is going to be hysterical no matter what. So we took a video of it. And as soon as we showed my partner the video, he's like, that's a moth. We spent hours like, you know, and so it's like, you know, it is what it is, but you know, we still handled the situation. It just wound up being much more comical. But you know, if you could, you know, maybe impart one piece of wisdom, or, you know, one lesson that, you know, you wish you had known kind of when everything started to unfold, you know, that might help somebody else, you know, who's, you know, struggling with their own sort of journey with disability. Maybe they just found out they have one or something like that. What would you want to, what little nugget of advice or of knowledge would you want to impart to somebody else?
I think there's a few things. I think number one, you did not bring this on yourself. That having a disability, having an autoimmune disorder, it is not a character flaw. I always looked back in the beginning and thought, what did I do? Did I not eat right? Did I work? Did I not sleep enough? Did I do this? Did I do that? And, you know, I didn't do anything to get this. This is just my luck. The second thing I would say is learn how to be your own advocate. So you can do little things in the beginning, like take someone with you for your doctor's appointments, so that if you forget to ask anything, they can. Write have a pain journal or a symptom journal, so that, you know, you can take that to the doctor and say, okay, this is happening, and I noticed that, you know, could it be related to this, or could it be related to that? You are your own best advocate. You are the person that can push you through the most difficult times, and learn as much as you can about yourself, and don't put this burden of having to be the superwoman, the superman, what's the word I want to use? Overcoming your disease. Just have a good life. and just do whatever you can to have a good life.
Yeah, because it's possible. That, you know, it's absolutely possible.
It is so possible. It is, yeah. It's very possible. Yeah.
Thank you. That I think I love that. What you said that it's not a character flaw. I love that. I think that is such an important thing that I don't think is said enough. That, you know, people blame themselves for their disability. You're like, what did I do? Why did I? You know, people often ask me, you know, how did, because my vision loss was due to an infection. I don't know how I got it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. The doctors don't know how I got it, but it was there. It was present. So, you know, I asked him, how did I get this? And he said, it doesn't matter. Asking that question is pointless. It's there. Right. It's there. We have to deal with it. And so he, you know, right at the onset, it's like, he was like, it doesn't matter. And that's going to prevent you from getting better and dealing with it. And so, it's when you get sick or, you know, something happens, it's you didn't do anything to cause it to happen. It just is. And I think that's important to tell, you know, because people can feel, what did I do wrong? Why me?
Right.
You didn't do anything. It did. It right. happens. And it's the thinking that way, it's going to prevent somebody from getting to that place of healing and have health and of resilience. You know, it gets in our, you know, I've told people before, you know, don't get in your own way. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. Plenty of other things are going to get in your way. You don't have to get in your own way.
Right.
Because it's hard enough. But with that, I want to thank you so much for coming on and being a guest. Marian Lizkowski. Did I say it right that time?
Yes. It's Yay! Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cause it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for your honesty and your openness about, you know, talking about what you've been through and your condition. And I want to thank everybody out there that is listening, and, please tune in every week to the Dissing My Ability podcast hosted by me, Ken Meeker, where I speak to people living with a disability and people who work within the disability sector, their allies and advocates, some educators and whatnot. So thank you so much, and be well, and remember to be kind. Thank you so much.